Hello, dumplings. Welcome to Let's Get Ugly, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest beauty, wellness, and lifestyle secrets that aren't always pretty, but always real.
We're your co-hosts, Trishna and Disha.
The sister duo keeping it 100% authentic, really silly, and sassy at the same time.
Yeah, we're really silly. So come join us, grab your favorite drink, and let's get ugly.
Tatiana, welcome to Let's Get Ugly.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me here. I am so excited.
We are so excited to have you, especially because your journey with your kind of social media stardom, your baking career, and now advocating for young entrepreneurs. It's so amazing, and we're going to have a lot to unpack today.
From cordon bleu pastries to comedy skits and even tackling serious issues like PTSD, systemic abuse in the creative industry, and more, there is so much to talk about. Let's start with how your creative journey began, though. You started first baking at just 14 and then trained. What sparked your passion for baking and entrepreneurship so early?
Ooh, that's a good one. I have so much to say about this. And I didn't start baking at 14. I actually started much, much younger. I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. Very first baking class that my mother took me to was when I was 5. And then I fell absolutely head over heels in love with the world of baking. I come from a family where no one likes to cook. Well, my grandmother likes to cook, but she doesn't have a sweet tooth. So I am not one of those people who's like, oh, my grandmother's recipe, like so many people are. My mother hates cooking and she kind of got into it because of me. And then I just kept doing it. I also was very, very entrepreneurial from a young age. I remember just going from door to door in my neighborhood, just selling brownies, cupcakes, all sorts of things. And I didn't just do that. I realized everything I could do. So then I went home, I went through my wardrobe, my toys, and then I was like, I'm just gonna go sell these door to door. And I was a good salesperson. And I guess it just evolved from then. When I was a teenager, I started bringing baked goods to school. That was my thing. I was known as the baking gal. And I did get a lot of inquiries from different people, teachers. They wanted baked goods. So that's how it slowly started. And I started my proper business when I was 14. And I wanted to do things right. Had a proper name, logo, website, flyers, promotional materials. I got into photography. We had different electives at school. So I got into web design photography. At that moment, when I was around 14, 15, I realized that it wasn't just the baking that I loved. It was the whole building a brand and being an entrepreneur and all of the different aspects of branding. And I knew that that's what I really wanted to get into. And I'm from Ecuador, which is quite a, well, I don't want to say narrow-minded, but quite a limited society in terms of what I could do. So I felt that I had outgrown it. And I had my eye on a big city, you know, like New York, London. So when I came to London, it was like my life changed. I had my big break and I wanted to make the most out of it. So that's what I started doing.
Yeah, I mean, like your decorated cookies have become such a hit and they're delicious too, because we've tried them and we love food.
Oh yeah.
Thank you so much.
But did you ever imagine that doing something like this would be a gateway to such a diverse creative career?
When I was 14, I started with the iced biscuits, iced cookie, which is now my specialty, and it's what we do at my brand. What I love about it is that it's a blank canvas. It's literally like having a real canvas or just a wall, anything. But you're just painting with sugar. You can do things three-dimensionally and have so much fun with it. And I think that helped me mark my way when I came to London. It helped me stand out and just, it wowed people what I could do. So I am very grateful to baking and cookies particularly, which is why I love it so much.
I love that. I think that it's quite interesting because apart from having a very successful pastry career and being a pastry chef, you also have a very successful social media career. And on TikTok, you have created some pretty impressive content. And I wanted to understand, like, what was that point where you were like, I'm going to start doing social? Like, how did that happen?
Okay, that's also quite complex. Like I mentioned, when I came to London and I was 18, I wanted to stand out. I wanted to be noticed, you know, since sometimes when one comes to the big city, it can be quite intimidating. So I knew that social media was the best way to do that. At that time, the concept of being an influencer really started to grow. So I started out like many accounts that we see nowadays, mostly fashion, lifestyle. I did do lots of recipes, but because I was in London, I didn't have that much time to actually do the cooking bit, so I focused more on fashion and lifestyle, and that was what I did mostly. I think the turning point in terms of TikTok and my comedy was when I moved to Paris in 2021, and it was during the pandemic, so I felt that, oh great, I'm moving to Paris, I get to show French culture, go to some really cute places, meet some great people, but that was no longer a possibility because of the pandemic. So what I thought, I was in my apartment just thinking, how can I keep creating content? I can't go outside because the lockdown was quite strict in Paris. So I decided, okay, what if I create a French alter ego and I make her comical, and I'll play myself and I'll do it in this sort of skit mode and I'll do a green screen, because I had previously lived in France as well. I was quite familiar with French culture and I had lots of culture shocks to share with the world. So I thought that that was a brilliant way to do it from my apartment. And I did have the validation that I was living in Paris, so I could share that. So I remember that first skit, it came out in January 20th of 2021, and it went really, really well. People love, her name is Odette, my French alter ego, and she's my number one character. She's got such a fan base. Her hashtag has what, millions of views and followers. And yeah, she's an icon.
Yeah, she's an icon. I love that.
She's an icon. Yeah, I can't even, because we're so different. And I feel like it's a gateway to actually say things that I would normally not say, because people don't associate the two of us. So that's really fun. So then it was my mother, you know, since I'm Latina, I'm from Ecuador. Odette was doing really, really well. She blew up. So then my mother kept telling me, you need to do a Latin character. You need to showcase, you know, your culture, and you speak Spanish. You do all of, you have everything to do it. I was a bit iffy because I didn't know if I could actually portray it, because I was a bit scared of that. But my mother really pushed me until I did it. That went really well. And then I started creating more characters. And then I just became a comedy content creator completely by accident, thinking that my thing was fashion and patisserie, since I was studying fashion and patisserie, but now I'm a comedian. That was quite interesting. And honestly, my mother said it didn't surprise her, because I was always the theater kid. I always loved being the center of attention. I always liked being in the lead. Became really natural. All of these things that I loved as a child now became my career as an adult. Just fascinating.
Yeah, that is cool. I mean, love for the influencer marketing space definitely comes with its challenges, though. I think yes. We can all agree. And it can be such a scary place to navigate sometimes, because you are doing all these amazing things, but I think people don't really understand most influencer journeys are very much solopreneur journeys.
Yes.
And you are very much kind of doing it on your own.
Definitely. And I just think that, like, you must have gone through several hardships. I mean, particularly one that we're going to be touching on, where there was a lot of different elements that got involved within there. But I think it's a really important time for you to share your story, honestly, and talk about what happened and how you overcame it, because I think it's more common than we know of, and there definitely needs to be more support in this space. So we'll leave it to you to share your story.
Okay, as I said, in 2021, I blew up on TikTok because of my comedy. Then I came back to London and I was still in uni. I was doing a bit of TikTok as my side gig. I couldn't really do it full time. Then it was 2023 and I was about to graduate. I was excited. You know, I was big on TikTok. It felt like the world was my oyster. I wanted to do so much. So I start looking for an agent. I had been doing everything by myself, absolutely everything, videos, scripting, everything, and yeah, being alone. So I felt, you know, it's time to actually expand the team and get someone else's help. So I find this agent, and I had spoken to many different agents and they didn't seem that excited, that keen. I guess so many people nowadays are influencers, so you just kind of see all sorts of things. Then I meet this agent in May of 2023 and it was like, wow, they said absolutely everything I wanted to hear. We had chemistry, they were great. It's like they had seen my vision board and they knew exactly what I wanted, because I hadn't even mentioned the whole culinary bit, that I wanted to have a cookbook, I wanted to be on television, I wanted to have maybe potentially my own show. You know, I am very ambitious, there's so much that I wanted to do, and I felt that most agencies didn't really grasp that, so I felt that they did. So I immediately signed with them. We had a great relationship for about 2-3 months. I trusted them. I felt like they were my mentors, my friends, because it had been quite lonely for me since I am here, you know, very far away from my family. I don't have many friends since my whole life. It's been mostly around my career and just growing on social media. So I felt like this emotional connection to them as well. So slowly, what happened is we agreed that a good way to start making money and working with brands was to host baking masterclasses where I would teach different people, companies, children, all age groups, different events. I would teach how to decorate cookies. So one thing led to another and they said, okay, we should establish a commercial kitchen, you know, and we can start selling these even more. And I thought it was great. You know, at that time, it felt like the time was right. I was just graduating. It had always been my dream to have a baker. It's part of one of my passions. So I said, yes, of course, I invested a lot of money. I paid them a lot of money to set it up. I paid them fees, photography, website, all sorts of things. And everything was going great. I thought everything was going great until the week that we start the bakery, it just completely changed. So it was like whole 360. It's like they had flipped a switch and they just become barbaric, tyrannical. Is that a word? But yeah, they become horrible. And I was just so confused. I was like, these people, they're my friends, they're my mentors. Because at the beginning, they were putting me on a pedestal. You know, everything I did was brilliant. Everything was amazing. Everything was wow. Every idea I had. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting treated horribly. Everything, I'm getting blamed for everything that's going wrong. My staff are being treated really bad. So I didn't understand what was happening. And I honestly did think, oh, I'm making all of these bad choices. They're right, they're right. Like, I'm the problem, I'm the problem. And as time went on, they had all sorts of things went wrong. They had really unrealistic targets. They had us making around 15,000 cookies a week when we had no clients. That was really weird, and they couldn't justify all of these actions. They had the team working in 2-degree weather with no heating. They had people come in at 5 in the morning for no reason, just working really long shifts when it wasn't necessary. So my mother was there supporting me, and she was also, at the beginning, we were just so excited. We just thought that we were so lucky that we found these people. All of a sudden, they changed my branding. They changed the website. They made it very minimalist and gray. It had a very particular aesthetic. And as you can see, if you're watching me on video, this is my style. You know, I'm very ruffled colors. The color purple is the color of my brand. Pearls, maximalism. That's me. And that's what I wanted to see reflected in my brand. But they just completely took that away. They wouldn't let me post on my social media. They didn't want me to be the face of the brand. Even when I would post a video, you know, I wanted to do more behind the scenes. I wanted to promote my products. They would take them down. They became very, very controlling. They started controlling every aspect of my life. When I did have content days for my characters, because my characters were my livelihood, I had made all of this money to invest into the company because of my TikTok. And then all of a sudden, I'm just not creative anymore. I just don't have the time. I don't have the energy. I'm overwhelmed by all of these decisions that they're making, and everything is going wrong in the company. Everything is just going to shambles. All of a sudden, it was around December of last year, 2023. They blackmail me. They send me a letter. They had kidnapped my website. I didn't have access to my website, to my social media, my contacts. And they asked for £36,000 in exchange. If not, they would bankrupt my company, They worded it like that, but it didn't make any sense. And they said they would have my visa revoked. They made all of these different threats. And at that moment, I said, no, I mean, this can't keep going on. I got lawyers involved. They fought really hard. Then what I did, since they had my social media, my website, I completely rebranded. In that moment, I decided, okay, I'm not going to try and fight for this website. I'm not paying them a single cent. Because at this point, I had them on retainer for about $10,000 a month. I was paying them so much money to manage me, to manage my company, do marketing, manage staff. And they were doing it all wrong.
So just to clarify, you were paying these people $10,000 a month.
Yes.
For how many months?
4 months.
4 months. And then on top of that, they tried to scam you out of an extra $36,000.
Yes.
Wow.
So that was only the retainer that they had a month. So when I first signed with them, like I said, it was for them to represent me as an influencer, to get me gigs, you know, the normal type thing. And they charged me $1,500 for that, $1,800 with VAT. And apparently that's not normal. So if you are an influencer, agencies should not be doing that. They should not be charging you that. They should be getting commission from the gigs that they get you, a percentage. Not, they shouldn't be charging you money up front. After after they had already charged me this initially, this is still May of 2023 when I had just signed with them, about a month goes by and they tell me, oh, we've been doing so much work for you and research for your brand. We're going to need another 1500 since we still don't have any gigs yet. At the beginning, I said no, and then they persuaded me to actually pay them. They were really, really good at persuading, at manipulating me, at saying the right things and doing it in a way that I would say yes. I'm not entirely blaming them. Of course, it was me making these choices. It was me making the payments. But I just think that's why you have to be so careful, because these people know what to say. They've had other victims that I've talked to and they have the exact same strategy. For the setup of the kitchen, I paid them something like 6,000. For the website, I paid 5,000. Each photo shoot, they would charge me 2,000 and we did about 5. So if you start adding everything up, it's around £100,000. Plus, of course, and that doesn't include what I spent on rent and wages, ingredients, all of that. So it was quite a lot of money. I had a bit of money saved up and then I borrowed money from a bank and also borrowed money from my parents to make it all happen. Maxed out credit cards, still paying those off. Okay, so let's go back to December when they make this threat. I think they felt at liberty to actually make that threat because they thought that they already got so far with the lies and they realized, oh, she keeps paying us. She gave us all of this control. And so she'll pay. I mean, let's scare her. Let's intimidate her like we always have. Bear in mind, I felt like these people, they had my future, my career in their hands, and they made it feel that way, that if it weren't for them, then I would be nobody. I would go back to square one, that they had the plan, they had the contacts, they had everything that I needed to get my big break. So that's why I gave them all of this power. So I rebranded, I created a new website from scratch. I did new photography, my own photography with my camera. At that month, it was January, I decided to completely re-strategize everything because the pricing, everything was a mess. The bookkeeping, inventory, the way staff was being managed, it was all so, so bad. So I just sat down and got it all right. I came out with a new line of biscuits, of cookies that could be sold every day through apps, like different chunky, tried to get corporate deals, I tried to get on fairs, I tried to do collabs, and slowly I started getting my brand back. I also was really lucky that the people who I rent the premises from, they were aware, they did think that there was something off about these people, that they were a bit too pushy. They wanted to move the whole thing to Manchester and they kept making calls because the same company has different kitchens that they rent across the UK. So they wanted to move my kitchen to Manchester because they wanted to get me away from the business. They banned me from my kitchen. They didn't like me being there. They didn't like me knowing. Like I said, they had the employees working in really horrible conditions and I didn't know because they had me at home just doing really random things like manuals and things that didn't make sense just to keep me occupied and draining my energy. So they wanted to move my company to Manchester. So I didn't ask any questions. I didn't have easy access to the premises. That's what happened. So I slowly start getting my brand back. Luckily, the people from that I was renting the kitchen from, they gave me a bit of a grace period. They helped me with that, knowing my situation. I called HMRC just explaining because I owe them a lot on tax. HMRC is like the British IRS, the government that you have to pay money to. We owed a bunch of income tax so much. And I explained, they also gave me a payment plan. And slowly we got the brand back on track. I felt like I owed it to my employees and my family and just myself. And here I am, still standing.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. Mm-hmm. What kept you going through this challenging time? Because you really had been so snowed under. Like, what made you feel like, okay, I'm going to get through this?
I had my mom right there and she was my rock because I couldn't really talk about it to other people since we were deep into the legal side of it and I didn't want to give them any tools to use against me. So I had to be very careful as to who I spoke to. At that point, I had been through such hell that just getting rid of them was just wow. I mean, anything that happens at this point, I can handle if I don't have to deal with them. You know, I would get so many panic attacks throughout the day. I couldn't sleep. It was really bad. I started getting rashes. I started getting UTIs. It was really bad. And then all of that just went away, even though I was drowning in debt and had a failing business. Just not having these people like breathing on my ear just made all the difference. And like I said, I also owed it to my employees who had been so resilient and they were on my side. They were also part of helping me build my brand by giving ideas, restructuring the business, just doing everything that they could because they knew how important this was to me. And they knew that what had happened, that they had completely taken my essence and my brand from me, and they wanted to have a part in giving me back my voice, essentially. It was also revenge. I think I didn't want to give them the satisfaction of seeing me crumble. They kept saying, oh, she's going to go bankrupt without us. We're the reason why the business is standing. We're the reason why she can't do it without us. She contacted my, well, the person running it, she contacted my parents saying that I was to blame, that I was lying to them. And that just made me really mad. And I wanted to prove to my parents, to them, to everyone that I could do it and that I could properly manage my business.
That's amazing, honestly. And I feel like the fact that you are able to be so strong in a situation like this is honestly amazing. And it's remarkable how your journey's changed over the last few months as well, because from that point of feeling like there was no hope to then coming along to just a few weeks ago where you were at Parliament with some good news, which is honestly incredible. So when you were at Parliament, you were awarded a medal, and that was a big turning point for you, I can imagine.
I was awarded a medal by an organization called the Parliamentary Society. They work alongside the Parliament, the Ministry of Justice, and they hold a yearly assembly at Parliament, which is directed by Rebecca Riofrio. She's honestly one of the most fabulous people alive, and I connected with her few years back. I was just so wowed by her outfit. So I come to her, compliment her outfit, and it turns out she's also from Ecuador. So we connected. She invited me to a couple of events. She became sort of my mentor because I really looked up to her. She's everything that I want to be. But when this was all happening, I came to her and she was one of the people that I trusted, and she knew my story. She knew how I picked the brand back up. She was impressed by that. She loved my story. She saw everything that I was doing. She supported my business a lot. So when the assembly came round, the organization awarded me a medal and they invited me to speak in Parliament and the House of Commons about my story. And it was such an honor because in this event, there was so many different people who have experienced violence and mistreat in the arts, in fashion, models. It's really horrendous what you hear, and there's such little awareness. Also, when we think about abuse, we think of physical abuse, we think maybe of sexual abuse, but also manipulation, narcissistic people, mental abuse, emotional abuse is so, so big. I was really happy to be able to talk about my experience, you know, especially that so many people become famous overnight, you know, through social media, and so many agents try to take advantage of them. So it was really an honor to raise awareness on the matter.
I was going to ask, actually, like, what do you think are, well, from the stories that you heard, because you were with a lot of different entrepreneurs that day, right? Were there any stories or anything that really stuck out? Any, like, other people's kind of journeys that you thought, oh, wow, that's really inspirational, or I didn't think of that?
Ooh, okay, so there was this story, this girl, she was Mexican, she's an actor, and she was sexually abused by a man in the industry. And what she said was when she tried to get help, what they told her was that since she's an immigrant, since she's foreigner, better for her to not get into trouble, or she would have her status, immigration status, revoked or anything like that. And I really relate to that also as an immigrant. And these people my agents tried to use that against me. So many people come to the UK in those circumstances, and they could be, people can use that against them. Like, oh, I'm going to get your visa taken away. Also, as a fellow Latina, that really spoke to me.
You know, honestly, I just don't think that there is enough awareness around this. Absolutely. Especially in creative fields, because it's an area that's recently more flourishing. So I feel like now is the time to really make sure that you are aware of what's going on as well, and doing the right thing for future generations.
Absolutely.
I was actually going to also ask about PTSD, because you've very openly spoken about, you know, surviving narcissistic abuse.
Yes.
How has this changed you?
The number one thing I would say is my self-worth. I realized how important that is, because from the moment that this all happened, that they tried to strip me from my identity from the brand, they tried to make me feel like I was incompetent, that I was making all of these negative choices, I was sabotaging the brand, trying to turn everyone against me. Even though that was the case, I always understood that I wasn't the problem, that they were the problem and I had to get rid of them. And I feel that most people who are victims of a narcissistic abuse, they don't feel that way. Statistically, actually, most people go back to their abuser because they actually don't feel worthy of more. They don't feel that they're worthy of a better partner, better situation, better job, anything like that, because they don't feel like they deserve it. So that's the main thing I think that it made me really value my self-worth. People will always try to take you down. I think you brought up that point earlier, you know, mental health and being on social media. People will always give you hate. You'll always have any kind of opposition, really, when you talk about anything. And if you know your stance, you know your worth, you know your value, then that's the most important thing. Even if you lose everything, then you know this doesn't define me. I'm worth it and I deserve more. And if you feel that way, then you will fight for more and you will want more and you will get it if you fight hard enough for long enough.
Definitely think fighting very important, but it also takes a journey, right, to feel strong enough to be able to do that. So in terms of your self-worth and kind of trying to feel like yourself again, what advice would you give to people who've gone through this? How can they do the same thing and start to feel like themselves again?
Don't be too hard on yourself. I think that the reason why I ended up in this predicament was because I just wanted so much for myself so quickly. And I was sold on this dream and I felt that I had to achieve all of these different things by the time I'm a certain age, or I have talent, I want more fame, I want more money. I want it and I have to have it. So just be a bit kinder on yourself. Like, it's fine, just breathe. You don't have to be all of these things at once. Just take the time. And I also think that it's so important to have the right support around you, even if it's just one person. It doesn't have to be a lot of people. Honestly, it might just be one or two people, because very few people will genuinely care about you. I think those are my main takeaways from my whole experience.
I definitely feel like there is such a thing as too good to be true now.
Yes. Oh, for sure. I mean, it did seem too good to be true, but they were really persuasive. And that's the issue. You know, I always thought that I was a good judge of character. I always thought that I was very savvy. And I have high self-esteem. I have a high sense of worth. Imagine people who don't. I mean, people who don't really have a support group around them, who don't really have the tools, and they're just so vulnerable, which is why we see so much abuse happening, especially towards women.
Definitely. I mean, what would you say, reflecting on it now, of course, like with the benefit of hindsight, what do you think are major red flags that creatives need to look for? How would you spot them now? Because they are so persuasive, right? They say the right things. How do you know? It feels like you get scared about dating people. You get scared about signing agents. It's like, how can we see through all of that?
Okay, yeah, I've thought about this a lot. First of all, if you're a creative looking for an agent, like I already said, they don't ask you for money up front. They shouldn't be asking you for all of this money, never. Even if they're a Nigerian prince or something.
Yeah,
they're Nigerian friends. I mean, the next thing is love bombing. We think of love bombing as a thing that happens in relationships romantically with men or women, but no, it also happens in business relationships. Like I said, these people, they would put me on a pedestal. Everything I said was wonderful, divine, amazing. Everything I wore was exquisite. Everything was fantastic. And I felt amazing. You know, I was like, oh, I mean, they make me feel great about myself. And then all of a sudden they start withdrawing that. And then you feel like you want to please them. You try so hard to please them because all of a sudden you became dependent on their approval and their validation. That's the tactic that they employed in terms of getting me to agree to their terms, that at first they were so happy and amazed by whatever I said, but all of a sudden, if it's not like that anymore, then I must be doing something wrong and I need to make it right. Okay, I'll do what you say. And even if I can't believe that I was in this scenario, but it happens and you don't even realize until you're so deep into it.
Yeah. Scary.
That is exactly. You took the words out of my mouth, literally. I feel like we all need to wave the flag.
Yeah,
all of these red flags that we hear about dating, I think that they definitely apply in a business setting, and it's so much more dangerous in a business setting since it's they have control over so many areas in your life. A relationship is a relationship at the end of the day, you know, how we interact as humans, even if it could be a romantic relationship, a business relationship. You could have a friend that's really toxic like this and just gets you to do whatever she says, and just you're her little minion. We see that a lot, and it's the same at the end of the day, so beware of that.
I know, it's a lot.
You went through one hell of a journey, and I don't think anyone can take that away from you. And I think, like, thank you for sharing your story, because it's not easy to talk about.
Yeah.
It's traumatic as hell. I can imagine it being very difficult to even, like, relive that, because blocking it out a little bit is somewhat of a coping mechanism too. So, you know, having to resurface all these feelings and emotions again can't be easy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't talk about it. I tried to talk about it on social media a bit, maybe 6 months ago, but I thought that it was really difficult because I would have to go back to the correspondence and the email, since I do want to make sure that everything I'm saying is accurate, that it wasn't just my interpretation. And luckily, most of the things that they were promising and most of the contracts, everything was in writing. So at least that I have that in my favor, that I can go back and actually know factually what they were promising and what they didn't deliver. So even when I would go back, I would get this horrible sense, and I felt like all of these physical symptoms that I had were coming back from the PTSD, and I just couldn't talk about it. Mostly because I felt that if I talked about it, I would be seen as an idiot, because you would think, why would you give them so much control? Why would you say yes? I mean, it's so easy to judge from that perspective when you haven't been in that situation yourself. And luckily, most people haven't come across a narcissist.
Yeah.
It's like an art, honestly, and they spend years perfecting it. Yeah, it was difficult at first, but I think the event at Parliament, I felt backed up, you know, the fact that it's a big organization and all of these very important people validating my story and actually seeing, okay, yes, you are a victim and it's fine, just talk about it. That gave me a bit more confidence, and I felt a bit more backed up. These people kept stalking me for a very long time, sending threats, emails. I didn't want to give them any more reasons for that, but now it's completely different. I mean, now I'm not scared of them anymore. They can do whatever they want. Now I know that I'm strong and I'm protected and I got out of it.
Yeah. So. Sounds like you have a community both on and offline.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, especially because you are able to connect with your audience in a way that I honestly haven't seen many content creators do before. And I genuinely mean that. What do you think's been the most rewarding part about connecting with your audience?
When everything started going wrong, I couldn't really talk about it in my English platforms with my British audience, and, you know, for legal reasons. So I started a social media presence in Spanish. So that's when I felt like I could really be myself, talk about my business, talk about the struggles. And I just did it as a way for catharsis, you know. I just wanted to talk about it. It was so important for me to just get it off my chest. I realized how I was inspiring people, how I was getting people to share their stories, inspiring people to start their own brands, because I was also telling them all of the things that I did wrong, all of the things that I wish I would have done differently, things to do to protect yourself. And I started sharing all of this information that I wish I would have known when I started the business. I feel like we don't have enough of that information, and told in a simple and friendly way, because of course, if you go online, you find everything, but it's just so confusing and intimidating to young entrepreneurs that I just feel so honored to be a voice and a channel for this community. I just never in my wildest dreams thought that I could do that and actually become a business consultant and mentor and guide people and help making their businesses better, stronger, getting more clients, bettering everything. And I'm just really proud of that. And I think that's the biggest achievement, the biggest takeaway from this whole experience. And of course, my personal growth. But I am very proud of that. And if I had to go through that experience to actually learn and be able to enlighten other people, then I guess that's what had to happen.
Absolutely. I think that it's time for us to head to our beauty question.
Yes.
Which has been very exciting. And before we end the episode, we always do these quick fire beauty questions.
So what's one beauty rule you love breaking?
I'm not into buying all of these millions of products that are marketed to us. So what I do is I take my blush and I use it as eyeshadow, or I take my highlighter and I use it as eyeshadow, and I just play around with what I have. I'm like that with fashion and buying everything, but not with beauty and makeup. I like to be resourceful.
If you could give your younger self one piece of beauty advice, what would it be?
Don't buy foundation in the summer because you're going to be tan. And then the rest of the year, it's going to look really bad. There was a point in my videos where I had really dark foundation on my face and I was blind to it. And then my mother had to tell me, look, I mean, you got to fix that. I mean, you're a comedy gal, but not to that extent. I mean, we got to... I
would sort that out.
That's what I would tell her, you know, be careful with foundation.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think we've all been there with that. Yeah.
I think we have.
Yeah.
Color matching is an art in of itself.
Or like when you go and you've got your sunglasses and, yeah, and it leaves the mark on your face.
The tan lines.
The tan lines.
Happens to me every year. Still haven't learned.
Yeah.
What's a beauty moment, good or bad, that you'll never forget?
Eyebrows. I think eyebrows are really controversial. I grew up in the time where everyone was plucking them. Even my friends, everyone was telling me, why are you not plucking your brows? Because mine have always been quite bushy and it was painful. And at the end of the day, it causes what, redness and irritation. And I'm just glad that we are past that, aren't we?
Yeah. We definitely are.
You
we
guys
definitely
are. The guru, and I remember people walking around with these really thin arched eyebrows.
Yeah, brows are definitely better left untouched, I think.
Definitely, but definitely. The trends always change, so we'll never know what's coming.
Be shaving them in 10 years.
Probably.
Probably. So before we wrap up as well, we have a card reading segment for
Lovely.
You. Where we read an oracle card for you for your day. Take risks. So that is your
fortune. The universe has spoken.
The Woo-hoo. Universe has spoken. Take
that
risks.
That's my mantra. I mean, the universe, you're so wise.
Yeah, yay. Universe. It's the cards.
It's the cards. But Tatya, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Honestly, it has been a pleasure to have you on, and sharing something so difficult with us has been groundbreaking, but also will inspire so many others.
It's been really eye-opening. It's been very honest and truthful. And I'm so glad you're over it. And I can't wait to see what's out there for you next. Thank you so much for getting ugly with us.
Thank you so much for listening to me babble.